The 1895 podcast is brought to you by Off the Ball, official media partner of Shelburne FC. The 1895, the official Shelburne podcast, exclusive to Patreon.
Ball sinks in towards where Davy Rogers is up. Rogers sweeps the left. Oh, Davy Rogers! Oh, what a goal by Davy Rogers!
I'm angry, Tony, I have to be honest.
Murray! Martin Shelburne! Noel Murray! Has she won it for the Reds? What a goal!
Here's a chance up! Shane Farrell! And Chelsea 2-0!
I'm sorry, Tony, but I'm angry as well. I was angry before the game. I've been angry for a long time.
And she gets the winning goal here. Slattery! Oh. Into the back of the net! That is what champions do! That is what winners do! Pearl Slattery!
Over the top by Sullivan. Hughes! Goal! Shelburne lead!
His cross sticks the biggest!
Kilduffy is the substitute and he scored! Shell's lead!
We are in to the 94th minute
and yeah! It's an over! Shelburne FC are first division champions!
It's our just reward. We deserve this big time.
Here's your host, Stephen Doody.
Hello and welcome to the 1895 podcast, the official podcast of Shelburne Football Club. And as always, we're brought to you in association with our proud media partners, Off the Ball. This week, we're stepping away from on-the-pitch matters a little bit. We're going to take a look at the off-the-pitch growth of Shelburne Football Club. And joining me today is our recently announced community officer, Tony O'Neill. Tony, welcome to the podcast and welcome back to the football club.
Oh, thank you, Stephen. Thanks for having me on. And cheers on bunkouts. Fair play to you.
Yeah, I mentioned there in the intro, it's welcome back to the football club. You have a bit of previous here. Do you want to just inform the listeners?
Yeah, I worked for, it was my first real job, full-time job in football in 1998 with Shelburne, and I was the community officer there. I think it was up until 2000. So it was working with Ollie Bourne and in our heyday, really and truly. We were flying back then, so it was a great time to work in a football club.
You've mentioned Ollie there. You must, everyone always does, you must have an Ollie Bourne story for us, do you?
Oh.
one that you can tell.
Yeah, thanks for putting me on the spot. To be honest with you, he was just such a, he was full on. I mean, he was the life and soul of the place while I was in the football club. Everything that happened in the football club happened around him. And he was, I think the game itself had so many different characters back then, and he was top of the tree, you know, he was a real personality and a forceful personality at that. I think he was telling me once, he was Tin Lizzie's first manager. He had 19 bands on the go. This guy had never done anything by halves, you know, so he'd come in first thing in the morning, he'd open up, put on the kettle and he'd have two banks of two phones with phone lines either side of them, both sides, and mobile phones, and he'd be on the phone for Shelburne from 9 o'clock in the morning till his break at 12, and he'd be doing what he does best, he'd be networking, you know. And he was a powerful force of a human being, and loved Shelburne. He drove Shelburne, he lived for Shelburne, and so to be in and around him and seeing what was important to him, you couldn't help be affected by it, you know. So I don't want to start going into the controversial stories because I don't believe in that, but to me, it was just a great period for the football club, and this man was one of the major reasons why. Yeah.
So you mentioned there it was a great period in the club's history. How did you come into that role originally? Well, obviously, we'll get into your present role shortly, but how did the original role come about?
I badgered him for a long, long time. I used to knock. I was a young coach. I started off myself on a fast course years ago, coaching. I started a local football team and I applied. This course came up and I got into coaching. And after the course finished, I had a couple of badges and I wanted to take a further. So I started writing out the clubs and everybody, anybody you could think of, went up and down the phone book as you did back then. It's not the same anymore. There was no online stuff back then. So I started knocking on doors, and one of the doors I knocked on was Shelburne, and Ollie opened it, and I got talking to him, and that was the truth. I actually knocked on the door and got talking to him, and then when he looked at me and took on the idea of I wouldn't leave him alone for a couple of months, and eventually he brought me in and gave me the job, and that's how it started. And at that time, there was very few football people that were full-time. I think there was I think Mick Neville was full-time, Ken McCarthy was full-time at the football club. They had a Foss course back then, you guys probably wouldn't remember that, but that guy was Richie Baker and the likes, and I think Desi had just gone to Manchester United at the time. And so I got in there as the community officer, but no one knew what a community officer was back then, if you know what I'm trying to say. So we were making it up as we went along, and you made up your salary by doing loads of different things, and one of them was going out and coaching the community and representing Shelbourne, the community. But I remember selling ads in the program, the match day programs, just to make up my wages. Like, so it was, you were wearing loads of different hats, and look, it was phenomenal. It was, you know, the great characters back then that were in there on the football club. So when we're still here now, but it was a great, like I said, it was a great time, yeah.
It's that real old school thing, isn't it? Like, just because it's your job title, you're not just pigeonholed into one thing, you're doing all kinds of things day to day. So for you, just for a bit, your background, I think it's important that people around the football club, supporters and volunteers, know the people that are representing the football club, and you're obviously representing the football club on a day-to-day basis. So was it always football for you as a kid? I mean, where did you grow up? Were you local to Tolga? Is that how it came about?
Well, Dunnycarney, so yeah, it is local to me. And yeah, I remember watching Sherlock score in 1996 against Sligo in the semi-final of the FAI Cup, you know. But for me, my playing days were finished very young, and I smashed my shoulder up in an accident very young. I was a goalkeeper. And I got into coaching very, very young, and started off, like I said earlier on that Foss course, which was predominantly League of Ireland players were on it, and Tom O'Connor rang it, and Billy Young ran it, former Bowes manager. So that was full-time football for me at a very young age. This is way back when, 1994, like getting your coaching badges, and I was told not to play in goal after my shoulder got smashed, so I played on for a couple of years to find everybody, and it's difficult to take someone away from what they love doing, and I was the prime example of that. So anyway, look, I got into coaching on that course, and I think I met you, Stephen, in St. Kevin's. That would be a couple of years after that, before I got into Shells. I was in Shells first of all, and for 2 or 3 years, then went into Kevin's on and off for about 8 or 9 years. I was in Kevin's for a couple of years coaching. Again, a very well-run football club. So, you know, you had top players in that place, and we were always coaching and always in thereabouts in league titles and national titles and developing great football players. And from there, I went to college, actually. Took a 1 year off for the first time in 15 years from coaching, I think. Went to Minute College and got my degree in social studies. And I think that's where the yearning for me kind of, I wanted to get back into community work, and I did a lot of work in, preventing people going to prison and stuff like that, and different programs. Yeah, so I think that was kind of overlapped with football. So when I was working in the community, football is something that seems to permeate into all sorts of different, you know, parts of society. And it doesn't matter if you're in prison or if you're in a local football club. I went from there into Belvedere. Kevin's asked me to go back. I went from there to Belvo for 3 seasons, and then I think it was 2018, I went over to Rovers for 4 years, working with Tony Cousins, Dave McAllister, actually, was running the 17s over there where Evan Caffrey played. And at that time, I was talking to the guy who was running over there, Shane Robinson, there, academy manager. I said to him, I want to work full-time again. I want to be a community officer again. And just ironically, the position was available. I applied for it. A couple of people applied for it. But with my background and being there, doing that, made the mistakes and learned from with the college degree and all the experience over the years, they hired me for the last 4 years as the community officer of Rovers. So I've been putting that program in place. And then I got talking to Steve Mulhern last year, because him and I share one or two friends together, and we were talking away about the idea of a community officer in Shelbourne. What would they have to do? And the conversation turned around to me actually coming over. Would I be interested in? But that was in December last year. So we revisited it several times, and eventually it turned into something. So it took a long time. I think I started on June 8th. So I have to be very patient. But I was really looking forward to it, because when I spoke to the likes of Steve Mulhern and, you know, John McGowan, these guys that are really passionate about Shelbourne and live Shelbourne, you could see how passionate they were. And there was nothing in place in terms of a full-time community officer. I think I was the last community officer, and that was 2000. So
that's probably very telling of, you know, the, maybe where the club has been or where the priorities have lay for such a long time. And now it's something that supporters have been very critical of, is that we hadn't been doing an awful lot in the community. You know, we had been left behind, and yeah, probably something that's just dawned on me now that you've said you were the last community officer that was in the club.
I was the last. I was
you
last
left the role in 2000, yeah. Was it?
Full time, but there was people making an attempt to, all the time on behalf of the football club, as you know.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
That would, the likes of me, John McGowan does stellar work as far as I'm concerned, and you know, Steve Mulhern. These guys don't get paid for doing anything, and they're behind the scenes walking away. And if Shelbourne survived, other than the fans that got behind them over the last couple of years, you know this better than anybody, Stephen. It's down to people like these guys that made it. And they had some presence in the community, but yeah, I was the last, I suppose you could say, full time community officer. And so I was kind of passionate about the idea of it, to be honest with you, because that's where it all started for me. And I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for the work that I've been privy to from Shelbourne, especially. That's where I started off. That's where I was allowed to grow. That's where I was allowed to express myself and make a lot of mistakes, in fairness, because we're only making up, as I said earlier on, as we're going along. So, yeah, I am today what I am because of the foundations and where I came from. And Shelbourne was a monster part of that. That was where it began. So for me, it was important that when I got the opportunity, when it was put to me, it was a real privilege to go back and do it again, yeah.
So when you took on the role, when you kind of knew you had the gig, if you like, what's that first couple of weeks look like in terms of a day-to-day? Like, are you getting together lists of clubs? Are you kind of looking into the work that's been done already? What did those first couple of weeks look like for you?
Again, John McGowan would say to me, this is who we know. This is who we know in the community. This is the contacts. Because of the work that I've done, like I said, over the years and especially over the last 4 years, I kind of know what works. So I know I'm the angles that I want to go into the community at, regardless of the institution, be it a football club, be it a school, be it social inclusion, whatever it is, charity work. First and foremost, you have to, John has some contacts, the club had some contacts. And, you know, I would reach out to them first of all. But for me, it was it's not just about planting flags in certain areas. It's about building relationships. So, Stephen, the best way to describe it is you have to sit down with people. And obviously, around this time of year, you're walking around any time of year, actually, you're walking around their schedule. They're not full-time, they're part-time. They're community people that we want to access, unless it's a school who are now shut down until September, if you know what I'm saying. So the first thing that I do is I reach out. I try to set up meetings. And these are sometimes community clubs that have had some sort of a relationship with Shell. So you're in there talking about that, where it was, what has been done. Are they happy? Are they sad? Is there something that they would prefer? So you always ask them, how can you help? That's where you start. And because I don't like the idea of going in and telling people what should be done and the way things should be done. I always ask, do a needs analysis and see what it is that you need. And I'm always aware that I'm representing Shelbourne first and foremost. So it's baby steps really with me, you know. So yeah, that's the first thing that we do, yeah.
So the coming into the role in the time you did, i.e. you know, at the start of the summer, was that, do you think that was a hindrance or a help in terms of getting the ball rolling? Because obviously the schools do close, so you've kind of lost that bit of engagement. But was it made easier by maybe being able to put the plans in place?
A little bit of both, you know. I mean, you can't the schools, like you said, are shut down. That's something that we will be active in come September. So that's very important that you're active in your local schools, and especially after school programs. I'll talk to you about that in a few minutes. But so in essence, it also gave some people that give an awful lot of time. We can imagine volunteers, especially in Shelbourne, who have their own full-time jobs, like you, who have their own full-time jobs. If they want to make any sort of a program grow, it demands another part-time job in a community football club or in somewhere like Shelbourne. So there's lots of people who have full-time jobs and a part-time job, which is Shelbourne, right? So it's the same in community clubs. Some of them are small community clubs. Some of them, Lusk, could have 1,000 children playing football in their football club. So the administration of that is monstrous, keeping that going. Again, it's all volunteers, right? So for me, you reach out to people and sometimes they're glad to meet you during the summer because there's not a lot of pressure on them. And sometimes they say, I don't want to talk to anybody about football, you know. They just shut down in June and they go, please don't call me again until the end of August or something like that. So I'm not used to that, and you coming from Kevin's wouldn't be used to that either, if you understand me, because I take two weeks breaks. Yeah, I take 2 weeks breaks sitting down, that's it. And then I'm itchy, you know, then I need to get going again. So I can't understand that. But you do have to always have a little bit of empathy. So whoever I'm dealing with, I have to be flexible with them because I am working off their diary. So, but it gives me a chance to work on admin or, as I said, just have a little phone conversations with people and build up relationships, because sometimes fences need to be mended for whatever reasons. Someone couldn't reach out to them. And we always have to be aware of what we're promising, I think, you know, and that's what we're going to be aware of going forward. You just, I suppose the cliche maybe is under promise and over deliver. And it's, I don't like calling it a cliche because it's very important that you do both, I think, you know, because you're representing Shelbourne, and that's the way I always see it. So, yeah.
So just on that, what, like, I'm trying to go to as simple terms as possible just so people get as much of a feel for the role. So what do you think Shells as a football club can offer to, like you mentioned there, you know, a Lusk or any kind of football club or school? What do you think Shells can offer to them?
Yeah, the kind of collaborations that you're putting in place. Okay, the best way to describe it is what I try to put in place is coach education programs in local football clubs. So most of the local football clubs, the community clubs, would have parents running football teams. And a lot of these teams would not exist if a parent didn't take them, if you understand me. So they do their PDP1, their PDP2. These are early coaching badges with the FAO, and then they're off and they're running, they're handed a bag of balls, they're handed a bag of bibs, cones, and say, go on, you coach that team for a year. And a lot of them have played, some of them love playing, and some of them want to get into coaching because they did love playing, and some of them have never, ever played football before. So therefore, they've never come near the idea of coaching before, which is a very difficult thing to do. So my job is to offer kind of a bartership, right? So we go out to these football clubs and we put on coaching sessions for these people. Start off 5-a-side coaching sessions, 7-a-side, 9-a-side, and eventually we deal with our 11-a-side teams. And we do that across the season. Now, this is seriously valuable to a lot of football clubs because there's many, many reasons for it. These are volunteers inside community football clubs that normally don't, like I said to you, they're asked to help that football club, keep it going. And a lot of the time, the only reason why they're doing it is because their son is in the club, their daughter's in the club. They go through the club, they go out the other side, they leave. Now, what we try to do is show them how your volunteers is a serious resource. And we educate that serious resource. You might get them people coming back again and wanting to stay in the club. And so very few clubs do that. And when they start doing that, the volunteers themselves get a huge boost from it because it's something that they look. When you get the coaching bug, you get the coaching bug. It's that simple. If these people keep turning up for coaching courses that we do kind of in between their FAI courses, if you like, we don't give them qualifications, but we give them the stuff that we have worked on and have learned over the years that works in a functional sense. So we break down some very, very easy sessions for them to do. So that's what we do, Stephen. We give out information and we can give out we provide a kind of a sounding bar for people that want to coach in football. And then we could ask them as well, is there anything else that they need? And, you know, if there's something that they come up with, and we see, can we help them? Is there more information that they want? And I don't have it. I go to someone in the football club or the professional environment. I'll see if I can help them with that. So that's the basics of it, yeah. That's what.
Yeah, and it's such a valuable thing. Like you mentioned a few times with Kevin's, like it's kind of a bit of both with Kevin's. Really, there is like a community club element to it, but there's also that, you know, I hate the word, but that elite element to it. But for people that aren't kind of involved in coaching or football per se, you'd be shocked by how little or what little help people can be given in a football club. A lot of the times you say there, it is just you're handed a set of jerseys, there's bibs, there's cones, there's footballs, going off out and, you know, coach a football team. And like, it's difficult when you have a lot of little 8-year olds standing there looking at you. It's funny the kind of pressure it can put you under.
Oh yeah. Well, it's very intimidating for a lot of people, and that's what you just say, take the ball, go and have a match. And like I said, it's that's the kind of help that we want to provide, and we want to make people a lot more confident. So if you suggest that to a volunteer organisation, like any football club, you can name it, we'll do that for you. So therefore, you can get more parents involved because they're more confident in doing it, and they realise they have someone that they can rely on that will help them out. So that's what we do. The question next is, why do we do that, right? So we're collaborating with that club and it turns like a barter. So can we get them people to come down to football matches and bring their players down to football matches? So I'll give you an example. If someone is prepared to volunteer their time a Tuesday night, a Thursday night, and a Sunday morning or a Saturday morning for these kids. And some of these kids are 7 years of age, and some of these people take them up to as far as 15, 16, 17, 18 years of age. They stay with teams that long. So if you're going to spend that length of time with people, this is what I found over time. These volunteers are more than happy to take these groups of kids out on a Friday night. And that's who you want, because them volunteers are already giving up their time. It's fairly normal for them to do that. Sometimes when you ask a teacher in the school to do that, they've seen that group of children for 30 hours that week or 20 hours, excuse me, that week. And I say to them, after coaching in the school, would you like to take them to a football match on a Friday night? And some expletives get sprouted out straight away. The last thing I want to see on a Friday night is that group of kids again, right? So we do a lot of after-school programs because of that, because there's a lot of associations with after-school programs where they do extracurricular work. It's the same as the volunteer work that people in football clubs do. So it's these volunteers, these extracurricular people that will take groups of kids to football matches. And they're our customer, if you like. So these people that we're helping out are our customer. We have to identify them, and we have to explain this to football clubs. And there's a lot of back and forth. There's a lot of stuff that has to be put in place before you establish what is trust. And you do have to establish a lot of trust, because League of Ireland clubs are synonymous to walking into football clubs and walking back out the door with their best players. That's the way they see a lot of League of Ireland clubs, you know. So that's where the affiliation comes in. So I'll explain the difference between the two, the partner and the affiliation to you in a second. But yeah, Stephen, that's how it starts off.
You mentioned there about, you know, getting groups of kids down and volunteers and coaches down on a Friday, you know, to a game, or maybe a Saturday afternoon for a women's Premier Division game. How important then does Tolka become? Because look, there's been an awful lot of talk around Tolka these last few years, and like, you would have happy memories with Tolka. I have more than enough happy memories, few miserable ones as well thrown in. But like, for an outsider coming into a stadium like that for the first time, how important does that match day experience, if you like, for getting hold of those kids or those parents or whatever the case might be?
We have dieharders who will come to Tolka no matter what the story is with it. They've been there, and when we were in Division 1, you remember that yourself, when there was very few on the ground. They're dieharders. They're always going to be there. Right, we're looking for a repeat business. We're looking for people to come down, to really enjoy the experience and want to come back again. So in terms of that, anything that we can do, we're talking about, obviously, at the moment, about the next level of what we can do with the ground. There's a lot of people that love the football club that are involved, and they are really trying hard to make this next step now. They're pushing really hard for it. But it is very important. You're dead right. But I know that these people are aware of that. The stakeholders are aware of it, and they're trying their best to make a change of it, and they're trying their best to upgrade it. And I see the stress in people, to be honest with you, that are trying to make it happen because they love the place and they want to make it better. For this reason, because they want to put on their best face, and they're in a hurry to do that. Have to do it correctly, though, you know. And to answer your question, it's very, very important.
So in terms of, you know, the amount of clubs and schools and community groups you can get to, say, is there kind of a boundary, but is there kind of an area that you kind of focus on, like a geographical area, or is it just, you know, whoever we can get to, or is there kind of one part of the city you're really trying to get into first?
And the first thing I did was walk across the road in Drumcondra. Spoke to them. They're 15 yards away from us. So, yeah, we're walking with them. But we spread out as far as Holt Celtic. There's a couple of clubs that we're going to be putting up on the website now pretty soon. And you'll see that the areas, the Fingal area is important. It's monstrous. It's growing all the time. It's, as far as we're concerned, it's something that that's very important to us, you know. So we already mentioned a couple of clubs. And we're going to announce 10 clubs, a partner club and 10 affiliate clubs now pretty soon, and we're going to put it up on the website. We're going to begin with them 11 football clubs. There's been a lot of proactive work being done with our partner club, Moctis, by our academy manager, Colly Barron and Aaron Rowe. They've been doing a lot of work with Moctis over the last year or so that they've been in place doing what they've been doing. So that'll grow, and they're getting better because they're putting them processes in place. Now, partnership and affiliation are two different things. I'll just jump onto that and tell you why we do what we do. And we'll describe this properly on the website now pretty soon, but I'll give you a short version of it. A partner club is a player development model that Colm and Aaron are working on with Moctis. So they would bring some of Moctis's players over to the academy in AUL. and they'd be coached them within our Shelbourne networks, and then the clubs, the players go back to their own clubs and hopefully develop, because they've improved, they'd help develop that environment there. Every now and again, Colm and Aaron will go over and do some work over in Moctis. So that's a player development model, back and forth. The players are coming over. Some little work's done with the coaches is whenever possible. It's done with the coaches. And affiliation is different. Because of what I said to you earlier on, we found this when I first went into Rovers, when I worked in Rovers, there was always background noise about, they've robbed players from here, what are you doing here? What the very first question that gets asked by me, that's what I always find when I want to come to a football club first and foremost, is, well, what's in it for you? Why is here, like, you know? So I know the context of that question. I know it's why it's being asked, because in some cases, the League of Ireland clubs have been in, they took players and they ran straight back out the door. I could never understand that, because one issue, and you're aware of this, and so is anyone that follows the League of Ireland, we have an attendance problem in the league. We have to grow it. So the very, very first thing I always do is try to settle things down. Don't overpromise. Begin the discussions and develop the trust and say to them, well, I'm not going to coach any of your players. I'm not here to coach your players. I'm here to coach your volunteers. They prick their ears up straight away and they go, what? That's why I'm here. This is an affiliation. It's completely different than a partner. So we're going to coach your coaches. And in return, over time, when you see that we do what we say that we're going to do, because that is also, Stephen, that's fairly rare. And this is what I came across. When I speak to clubs, they say, yeah, we were promised this and we were promised that. And the whole list of stuff that someone promises when they walk in the door, and there's about two items off that list that gets ticked. So what I do is I go in, we meet them, we try to establish rapport, context, and then begin, because we're representing Shelbourne, one of the greatest football clubs in the League of Ireland. So we have to get this right from the start. And what we do after that is we say to them, if I have done after a period of time what I said I'm going to do, well, then that's, we continue this. If we don't, there's nothing signed here between the two of us. You can walk away from it. And we try to, they settle down. They start to relax because they know that we're not there for an alternative motive. And it's usually the best way to begin, if you understand me. So we start coaching the coaches. And after a while, when they trust, they start coming to the games. And that's what we did over the last couple of years in Rovers. And the numbers are very, very good because of it. So what we'll do, Stephen, is we'll put the names of these football clubs up on the website in the next couple of days, hopefully maybe the week after this, at the latest. And we'll come with Keith McDerby, Darren Cleary and David Stanley on combining our efforts to get the wording right and all that kind of stuff looking great on the website, because it's their first time talking to you guys as a community programme from my perspective. So I want to show you what we do, if you understand. But it's subtle, and it has to be subtle, because these football clubs deserve respect from League of Ireland football clubs and vice versa. And the only way of doing that is building bridges, building relationships and bringing everyone together, yeah?
Tony, you mentioned there that you're looking to coach the coaches in clubs rather than coaching players. How important do you think that is for those clubs? Because there is this thing, and you've mentioned it a couple of times, that clubs especially, not so much schools, but football clubs can often have their guard up against League of Ireland clubs, especially since the National League has come in. Again, you've mentioned it. Clubs go in, cherry pick a couple of players, and then it's, you know, tip the cap, good luck, see you later, we've gotten what we came for. Is that a rare thing that a club is offering a little bit more than just, you know, we're going to come in for a couple of weeks, see who's good and take them away? Is that the norm in the league, or would you say Shells would be breaking the norm by offering more than just coaching players?
That's a good question. I have to be honest with you. I think really focused coaching programs in football clubs, boy, League of Ireland clubs, is rare. You know, we did it over for the last couple of years across the water there. But from what I hear from football clubs that are associated with other clubs, it's not really done. And I don't understand why, because it's what's needed, if you understand me. It's definitely what's required, because, you know, we got so much ground that we're going to have to not just repair, rebuild, but we have a lot to offer. You know, it's a wonderful football club, and you know, I really believe, because of some older relationships, or maybe even some, like you pointed to, some, you know, contextual stigmas that are attached to a football club or League of Ireland in general, that there's not really good relationships, and there's a lot of people inside the DDSL clubs and, you know, female clubs MGL clubs that have a vision in their head of what happens if you associate yourself with a League of Ireland club. So we've got to present a brand new image, and we have to follow through what we say. Again, I keep harping back to it because of what we represent, and we want to rebuild. You know, we want to get in new fans, new generations of fans, and the only way of doing that is building relationships. That's impossible to do if you don't build relationships. You cannot turn the lights on a Friday night and expect people to come down to football matches. It just doesn't happen. It's the improvement. There has been an improvement in attendance since COVID, I think. But we need to keep working hard now. You know, we can't get all relaxed about that. We have to keep working hard. And this team is a fantastic team under Damien Duff. It's a fantastic team under Noel King, what they've achieved over the last couple of years. We need to get supporters to the ground as much as we can. You know, not just Dublin derbies. Sorry, go on.
No, you're okay. So as a community officer then, is your role to maybe, you know, be that foundation nearly that the club is built on, in that, you know, results, you know, anyone can sell out their stadium when they're top of the league and playing in Europe. That's easy. But would you say a goal for you as a community officer is that those attendances will stick, you know, well, that's regardless of, you know, whether you're down the bottom of the league or challenging for Europe, there'll always be that kind of that foundation underneath.
Yeah, that's the hope. And I believe that you can do that, because young children, when they come, now I'm talking about 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds come down to Talkett. They don't know it was cup finals or they don't know it was trophies or anything like that. Okay, if they're at the FAI Cup final in the Aviva Stadium, they know they're there. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is, you've noticed when you were in the first division, there was 600 people in the ground, 400 people in the ground. There's a reason for that, because of what you said. You hit the nail on the head here. We need fans that grow up with the football club and love the experience. Like we said earlier on, Talkett Park is very important, the experience on the night. They need to go there, they need to love the experience under the lights. Robbie Woodcock, the work that he does on the pitch at half-time is commendable. We've got to get kids playing football under the lights on Friday night, on the pitch at half-time. So the experience, that's you can imagine what's going through a child's head when they're doing that. Like, you know, me and you used to play when we were kids, thinking we were whoever we were, right? Someone, Roy Keane or whatever. But the point being is they're scoring goals under lights on Talkett Park and a full main stand. It's an amazing experience for a 6-year-old, an 8-year-old, a 9-year-old. They're having great fun. We've got to find better ways of making them have a wonderful experience while they're there. That all they'll care about then is that experience. They don't care about the league position. They don't seem to understand that because they're too young. They will associate themselves with Shelbourne and they'll grow up with that, if you understand me. You're dead right. You get fans to games when you're in the Champions League and you're winning matches and you're winning leagues and everyone's happy about the environment. But you can feel the excitement in Talkett Park now. There's something starting. You can feel it again, you know. It's starting to muster again. We have to take advantage of that. We've got to present the best face that we can. And then we have to get out into the community and back it up with good, honest, hard work and building relationships. And that means many, many different things. Every now and again, get a player out to a ground, a training ground, shake some hands. When they recognise that player playing on the pitch, that's gold dust, you know?
Tony, unfortunately, we've run out of time, but as you've mentioned, there will be an announcement in the coming days or weeks about new affiliate clubs and new clubs that are going to come under the Reds Together banner. So when that happens, we'll get you back on. We'll be able to talk through how much the job changes in the Shells off season, the kind of work you're going to be doing in the off season to try and keep that interest up, getting into schools, getting into different types of communities. And thanks a million again for giving up your time. And of course, the Reds are back in Talkett Park on Friday for a massive Rings End derby at home to Shamrock Rovers. They kick off at 7:45. Get your tickets in all the normal places. We're hoping for a sellout, so when those tickets are on sale, get them while you can. Again, thanks a million, Tony, and I'm sure I'll speak to you on Friday.
This podcast was brought to you by Off the Ball, official media partner of Shelburne FC. For all the latest sports news, visit otbsports.com. Rest in the sunset, way out on the sea. Oh, carry my loved one.